Welcome to Safety First with Danger Tate.
Welcome to Safety First with Danger Tate. I'm Tate, and this is my show where I talk to cool people about the cool things that we do. Our guest today is Mark Singleton. Pew, 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 pew. Mark was the executive director of American Whitewater for 18 years, and he now travels around the country pursuing outdoor activities galore. He has attended more Golly Fest than most people, and today we're going to hear all about the events and wild stories from Golly Fest. Mark Singleton, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Yeah, pleasure to be here. It's awesome to have this technology to hook us up. So
I know, it's so exciting. Well, Mark, tell us where you're calling from.
Well, I'm actually currently in Teton Valley, which is the Idaho side of Grand Teton National Park. And I'm here for the month of March, just being a dirtbag and skiing as much as I can.
Did you start skiing or paddling first in your life?
Well, actually, I started paddling first.
Okay.
You know, skiing came pretty much right after that.
And somehow in all of your life's paths, you ended up with American Whitewater and you ended up being the executive director. Can you just give a little context into how you kind of got linked up with that role?
Yeah. You know, in the early 2000s, American Whitewater was searching for an executive director. I'd been the marketing VP at a large East Coast-based outfitter, Nantahala Outdoor Center, through the 90s, actually. And I'd worked with a number of the board members that were board members at American Whitewater at the time. They told me the opportunity was opening up, and I really wasn't that interested in it. I'd heard some challenging stories about where AW was at the time, and kind of just let the opportunity pass. But there was one board member in particular who I'd worked with who was very persuasive, and he just encouraged me to look again. And I said, "Well, look, if this is such a great deal, you're coming with me." And we gotta dig into this thing, because there were some financial challenges.
Okay.
And I needed to understand them better. And I'm not a finance guy, you know. I mean, I know fifth grade math. And if you can't explain it with fifth grade math, the basic addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division, then you can't explain it. That's just how it works. I mean, this isn't rocket science. And he was a banker, and you know. Anyway, we dug into things. I could, with the information I had, I could kind of see a path forward. And I ended up applying for the job, and I got interviewed at Golly Fest, right?
What?
So, yeah. So my American Whitewater interview for the ED position happened at Golly Fest. Now, I'll tell
when?
You.
When? Like, how in the festivities did that happen?
Yeah. It was a weekend long interview. So, you know, they wanted to make sure that I could answer questions, paddle a kayak, and probably drink beer too.
I was going to say.
I mean, it's the whole package. But anyway, the interview happened at Golly Fest, and it was, at the time, it was kind of a semi-intense period where, you know, there were various people that the board was meeting with. I was just one of them.
Okay.
And the interview itself was, it was bizarre. It was just crazy. There was a big, long table. And you got to understand Golly Fest. I'll explain it a little bit better here. It happens at a park that's the regional park for the community of Summersville, which is the local community for the Golly River. Closest big community. And it's a 4-H camp and a bunch of athletic fields. So the 4-H camp has all of these cinder block buildings that look like they came, I mean, right out of World War II. They're just cinder block buildings.
Okay.
And, you know, hard fluorescent lighting and a long row of folding tables and chairs where the interview took place. There were like 30 board members there. So on either side of this long row of tables were 30 people, 15 on each side, The guy that was interviewing me at one was at one end of the table facing towards me. I was 15 people deep at the other end of these tables put together. It was like,
what?
It was just like set up like a ping pong match, right? And the style of interview that he used was just to barrage me with, you know, with questions, just, you know, question volley. I've heard about this style of interviewing. I'd never experienced it
before. What kind of questions was he asking?
They're just very, you know, very basic kind of, what would you do in this situation? You know, what are your accomplishments? You know, what are you, you know?
Did you at least have a microphone or were you shouting across the table?
It was just like this.
Oh my gosh.
And the questions would come at me and I'd fire off a response. And it was like the heads of these 30 board members, they were going, looking at the person asking the questions, looking at me, looking at the person, looking at me. I mean, it was just like a ping pong match. Anyway.
And was that your first time attending Golly Fest? Was for that interview, or had you been in the past?
No, I'd been to Golly Fest early on, so I kind of knew what the drill was.
Okay.
You know? So you know, when you go to Golly Fest and you go, okay, this is a dilemma. I'm going for a job interview. Do I wear a button down shirt or do I just go there with t-shirt and board shorts like I normally would?
What did you decide?
I actually did a real casual, you know, checkered button down shirt, just like flannel shirt, and just kept it loose. There were some suits and ties involved, but that wasn't me.
Okay, here's what I'm curious about. If you had three words to describe Golly Fest, could you come up with three words?
I probably could. I could probably come up with two words.
Okay, let's hear them. Better.
Those two words are Grateful Dead Show and Olympic Village. Because that's what Golly Fest is. Golly Fest is a cross between a Grateful Dead show and the Olympic Village. I mean, it's, you know, it's got all the, you know, all the hard charging boaters that come out to paddle the Golly. And then it's got this whole carnival festival atmosphere thing going on.
And has American Whitewater always hosted it?
No. The way Golly Fest started is back in the early 80s. There was a proposal to dewater the upper 3 miles of the Golly River, putting a penstock from the base of the dam down to below Pillow Rock that would put in a hydroelectric project. So the first 3 miles of river would have essentially been dry. Water coming out of the dam would have flowed into the pipe. The pipe would have delivered water down below Pillow Rock to a hydro generating facility. So, you know, boaters got together and, you know, really created this a grassroots campaign that was spearheaded by a group by the name of Citizen for Golly River. So Citizens for Golly River was put together by a gentleman by the name of David Brown. And David had a real interesting career in paddle sports. He later became the executive director of America Outdoors, which is the outfitter guide association that really does a lot of lobbying work to protect operations that outfitters have and permits that outfitters have that are really important to the outfitting community. So David at the time was spearheading Citizens for Golly River. He was also working on a campaign on the Ocoee River in Tennessee to get TVA to continue to release water in the Ocoee. And, you know, David had a large footprint in both places. And Golly Fest was an outcome of this Citizens for Golly River campaign, which was successful. And the hydroelectric project was beat back.
Nice.
And Golly Fest was the celebration of the success of this grassroots campaign to push back on the hydro operation. And it was intended to be a one and done deal. You know, we were successful. Let's have a party. You know, we can raise some funds and, you know, pay our bills and, you know, move on to the next thing. So that's how Gollyfest started. The first one was in 1984.
Wow.
I attended it. That's
amazing.
That's how I got introduced to Gollyfest. But at the time, I was a guide on the Gauley River, and I'd been guiding there for a number of years. So I knew the Gauley, knew that program.
When did Gollyfest take on such the, you used the word carnival characteristics? Like, when did that really kick off?
Well, that was a slow build.
Okay.
It wasn't like a light switch got thrown and all of a sudden it just turned into this thing. And, it was just slow. So after the first one, there were a group of folks who had seen the opportunity to rally the paddling community and lobby for additional releases on rivers that were controlled by hydropower operations. Mm-hmm. And, they became instrumental in both the development of AW and in securing releases on a number of rivers, primarily in the Northeast. So rivers like the Moose, the Hudson, these were some of the kind of early success stories for American whitewater coming out of the early to mid 80s. American whitewater had been around since the 50s, producing a journal and putting out safety information and sharing information about paddling, both kayaking and rafting. Initially the craft that were used of choice were Army surplus rafts, Grumman canoes, and full boats, the canvas covered, plywood shell boats of the 50s and early 60s. So if you go back to these old AW journals, they're all on the website, by the way, which is AmericanWhitewater.org.
Oh, fun.
There's a library tab on the upper right-hand corner. Just kind of click that and go to journals. I mean, it chronicles the whole development of whitewater paddle sports
wow.
in the United States. So you can peruse these old journals, and it's an archive that's really quite interesting if you're into geeking out about rivers. This whole Gollyfest scene was just a way for folks that were getting into this new arena of negotiating for water out of hydropower operations or trying to beat hydropower operations back. It was just a way to raise money. I mean, they needed to fund themselves.
Mm-hmm.
The event was largely an opportunity to put together some cash and pay for whatever expenses they were incurring and what was largely just a volunteer effort. There were no paid staff. It was all done mm-hmm. for the love of rivers. I mean, that's
wow.
what drove it.
And I feel like, that's what I was going to say is I feel like that's still, the people that support it are people who love rivers and want to see them continue to be loved, have people find them. Yeah.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Correct me if I'm wrong here, but AW hosts three different river festivals. The Gollyfest is one of them. What are the other two?
Yeah. So, we've actually hosted a number of different festivals over the years, but the ones that are continuing that, have a really strong following are Feather Festival, which is in Northern California
right.
on the Feather River,
uh-huh.
right?
Yeah.
That's all about gaining water in the Feather through hydropower negotiations and rewatering mm-hmm. a river that was essentially dry for decades. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's a fantastic river with multiple sections and Feather River and the festival. They're a big deal to the Northern California paddling community.
Mm-hmm.
So that has a very loyal following. And then Deerfield in Massachusetts, the Deerfield River is another river that, again, water came out of hydropower negotiations where paddlers took a lead role, inserted themselves, lobbied for downstream water, and were able to obtain it. And as a result, there's a thriving kind of outdoor community that is around the Deerfield River that, you know, includes really well-known storied outfitters like Zor Outdoors and their paddling school, and, you know, a number of other operations that, that take place on the Deerfield. So, you know, those are kind of the big river festivals, but then there's Gore Fest in Colorado as well.
Oh, right. And it used okay.
to, you know, the big draw on Gore Fest used to be a kind of a class five race, but due to challenges with insurance for class five races, that's not as much what it is about, but it's a community mm-hmm. gathering to celebrate water in the Colorado River, especially the headwaters reaches of the Colorado. And of course, as you know, everyone's trying to stick their straw in the Colorado River and, you know, take their water allocation out. So being an advocate for downstream uses of water, recreational uses of water, and supporting a recreation-based tourism economy in Colorado around the river, it's a big deal. I mean, it's yeah. huge. So it's very important set of issues. So, you know, you can see that all of these river festivals have this nexus about, you know, a river and water in a river. And if the river doesn't have water in it, you know, you don't call it a river anymore. You call yeah. it a ditch.
Yeah. It's been really fun to hear from so many different, you know, people in the river industry and yourself included of all of the wins that the river community has had, and in a large part thanks to AW and all of the work that AW does to send the word out that this is happening. And so I think the festivals are really good for that. What I hear now with Golly Fest is there's, you know, the total look of like this insane party. And when I think of Golly Fest, I just can see a hard shell kayaker being thrown off of that rock or, you know, a raft coming up and trying to like jump onto the rock and like, or dry flip and stuff like that. When did the debauchery at that one spot kind of begin? When did people start throwing people off of rocks?
Well, once again, it was a slow build. So access in the Gauley has always been kind of a long-standing issue, right? Trying to get people to the river, get people out of the river. You know, when I was a guide there in the late 70s and early 80s, there was no midstream access, right? It's 23 miles of pretty continuous whitewater. And, wow. you know, there was no place to get customers out other than a railroad bridge at Peters Creek with a railroad track. So what we would do in those years was we would actually walk our guests out. So we'd have a 6-boat trip. There's a guide in each boat. Two guides would walk the guests out. That means we now have 4 guides and 6 boats. The guests walked out to a parking lot that was you know about a mile down the tracks. It was mm-hmm. you know, it wasn't a hard walk, and then you know, a bus would pick them up and take them back to the meeting place. And so now you've got 4 guides on the lower Gauley, which is another 8 miles of river. Mm-hmm. With 6 rafts, right? Well, you do the math. You can't get somebody in each boat. So we would double guide a stack of 3 rafts.
No, you
down
wouldn't.
To the lower Gauley. Oh yeah.
What?
This is how we got boats out of the corridor in the late 70s.
How would your paddle even reach the water?
Oh, it didn't. You had to bend over.
Oh my.
You know, but you know, you beaner the boats together. You go 3 deep, you know, you got 2 guides now, each in the stern, and yeah, and you ride the current, you just stay in the current, you know, throw in some directional strokes. It's not like you're able to really build up a lot of forward momentum.
Oh
and
my gosh.
We would paddle those boats out. And you know, then it got to be, well, okay, so how high can we stack them? And I still remember going through MASH, which is one of the larger rapids on the lower Gauley, two big holes in it.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, we tried stacking 4 high, and instead of having the boats beanered and cam strapped together, we just kind of held them as a stack, and we stood on the we stood on the tube of the bottom boat. We just kind of used some downward pressure and held on. We hit that first hole. This whole stack just exploded.
Oh, I'm sure.
Both me and the guy that I was with at the time, who was still a lifelong great friend, got slung up into the air. And I can still remember hearing him shout as I'm heading down into the water, "You let go." So there was always this kind of culture, this sense that, it was the Wild West of rafting. I mean, those years were unstructured, and, you know, it was, you just had to make things up as you went, because there wasn't a lot of, there weren't a lot of systems in place to manage things. There wasn't a lot of access in place to manage things. So at any rate, you know, that's the way life around the Gauley evolved. And then sometime in the early 80s, a bunch of guides got together and they said, you know, Gauley's a great place to do overnight trips. And it was. We actually ran overnight trips in the late 70s and early 80s. And, it was before land was carved up down there. And we could basically camp wherever we wanted. And, you know, a guide trip came together. And I think there were probably about 40, 45 people on that initial guide trip. And it was called Gauley Folly. And it was, everybody kicked in. I think we all kicked in like $20, and five of it went to food and 15 of it went to beer.
And
we ended up on the river for 3 days, just floating down. And, you know, that culture carried over. I mean, it wasn't crazy. It wasn't wild. I mean, you hear the stories, and the stories have all been largely exaggerated, although I try not to do too much of that.
I was going to say, have they really been exaggerated, or is that truly? I feel like Gauley Fest is just
insanity,
from what I've heard.
Yeah. So the point is, this had been, this is a grassroots event. It's about the river. It's about people. It's about a community that comes together because they want to celebrate the river. They want to be on it. And so those things that you mentioned, the hucking boats off Postage Due at the bottom of Sweets Falls, the sliding boats off of Pillow Rock, and trying to do aerial maneuvers, those things all developed over time as people were thinking about ways that that they could experience the Gauley that were unique, unusual. Certainly squirt boating played a big role in the development of the Gauley, because Gauley is a great river to stern squirt a long boat, a race legal boat. Mm-hmm. And you get huge stern squirts because the Yetis are deep and they're powerful and they just stand you up. And so it's almost the perfect playground for sky cracking kayaking, looking up at the sky and just burying your stern. And all of that just kind of added to this mystique around the Gauley River as, this incredible whitewater playground that you could schedule, right? Mm. These releases were schedulable. So you knew that, during Gauley season, water would be guaranteed. People could plan on it, months in advance. Mm-hmm. Outfitters could book trips on it, a year in advance. And it was something that was dependable. So all of that kind of built along the Gauley, and outfitting grew, became more standardized, more systemized. Outfitters grew with it. And the festival, continued to flourish and grow. Mm-hmm. And it was a celebration of American Whitewater's successful outcomes, largely in hydropower negotiations, which is this really wonky, crazy thing that's overseen by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, or FERC, right?
Okay.
And it's something that American Whitewater was able to gain a lot of expertise in. It's kind of the confluence of some early godfathers of the program for representing whitewater being at the right place at the right time, knowing the right people, and being able to insert language in the Federal Power Act of 1986 that included equal consideration for downstream use of water. So that equal consideration clause balances upstream use, which would be like lake owner, reservoir operations, marinas on lakes, with downstream use, which would include private paddlers, rafters, outfitters. And that equal consideration clause is something within the Federal Power Act that we've, as American Whitewater, been able to hang our hats on and say, okay, we can insert ourselves here. We can represent the interests of downstream water, both for recreation and for ecological reasons, to try and advocate with utilities to release water in some scheduled way for whitewater recreation. So that's one of the things that worked on the Feather and the Deerfield. And I mentioned those events earlier.
I really appreciate you sharing all that, because I think it gives a lot of great context into what is actually going on behind the scenes. And it also opens my eyes to, okay, yeah, Gauley is about way more, and the successes that you have at just that one thing can spiral into so many other successes through legislature that I've never even heard of, nor probably would never hear of if not talking to you. So it's cool to hear about. So I really appreciate that.
It's just a wonky rabbit hole.
It's cool to hear the behind the scenes.
Yeah.
I do want to hear about, you know, it's a 3-day festival, right? So within those 3 days, every year, what is the one event that you look forward to the most?
Well, for me personally,
yeah,
the one event that I look forward to the most is being on the river on Saturday morning early and going paddling. Oh, just because, you know, the festival is full on. I mean, it's for staff that work the festival, it's a big deal. It's a major event. You know, you're basically up until, you know, 2 a.m, waking up at 7 o'clock. You're not getting a lot of sleep. It's just, you know, it's an endurance event. Okay. And, you know, being able to balance that with some time on the water is just that's the part of it that I look forward to. And, you know, there are things that are going on the river, and that's, you know, that's largely just groups of people getting together, you know, enjoying each other's company. It's not an organized, the river time is not organized by American Whitewater. We just take advantage of those. We just take advantage of that release schedule and encourage folks to go paddling. So the event is really paddler focused, either rafter, you know, kayaker, hard boater. You choose the craft. It's all about the river. And
how many people attend?
Over the course of 3 days, we probably get about 2,500 individuals there for the weekend. Wow. So the field and the festival site is just covered in tents.
Yeah.
You know,
wow.
People are camping there. And this has been another issue with the Gauley, is that sometimes it's just been really hard to find places to camp. Mm-hmm. So when you have, you know, when you have a place where you can go camp, that's got, you know, food available and entertainment available and has this great, you know, kind of vendor setup where brands are bringing in their gear and showing it. And, you know, there's used equipment for sale. There's even vendors are selling their blems. There's apparel. I mean, it's just, it is this kind of carnival atmosphere with camping, and it just makes it really easy to kind of go in, set up, go paddling, and then have a place where you can hang out and party. And you can imagine, look, you know, you got 2,500 Class 4 boaters, right? You know, of all kinds.
Yeah.
And they're stoked because they've just been on the river.
Yeah.
And they bring that stoke back to Gauley Fest.
What's the best costume you've ever seen?
And you can't contain it. You just can't contain it. I mean, you throw the lights on this event, and whatever's going to happen just happens. Right? And my, you know, as ironically, as the adult that had to be in charge for many years, my main concern was just don't let anyone get really hurt.
Yeah.
And I can say that we never had anyone get really hurt.
Okay, way to go.
So, you know, so that part of it worked. I mean, there are all sorts of things that, you know, that happen at Golly Fest that should probably stay at Golly Fest. But there are a few that are just really notable.
Okay, let's hear them.
So, you know, there's, like I said earlier, this is a 4-H camp, right? Yeah. And as you can imagine, a 4-H camp, it's got a dining hall, and the 4-H ladies use that dining hall to set up a boat or dinner. And the dining hall has a big bell in front of it that's on a metal post, right? Mm-hmm. And this became kind of a long-term thing, where initially there was a group of cheerleaders that came out of Morgantown, West Virginia, where there's a big university, and they figured that they could build a human pyramid, right? And ring the crap out of this bell, right? And they did. And then subsequently they went around all night trying to pimp all of these young, kind of, you know, beefed up class 4 boaters to climbing the damn pole and ringing the bell, saying they rang the bell. Can you ring the bell?
Oh no. So
all night long, this damn bell is just clanging and clanging and clanging. Right. And, you know, folks are trying to get some sleep. I mean, it's 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning, and the bell's still damn ringing. Right. So the next year we get to Golly Fest and we go, we can't have these people ringing this bell. So we go to Walmart. We buy tubs and tubs of Vaseline. Right.
Uh-uh.
And we coat that damn pole in Vaseline. And we just go, okay, this is going to be like the squirrel trying to crawl up to the bird feeder, and we're going to watch them slide back down. Well, they slid back down, but eventually they wore the Vaseline out.
No.
Damn bell's still ringing. That didn't work. We hire local sheriffs just to be visible so that, you know, things can be relatively safe. I mean, my main concern is getting traffic in off the highway and not having things back up and vehicles. Vehicles are obviously, with a big event like that, a problem. Mm-hmm. So the sheriff said, well, look, we know how to fix the bell. We're gonna mace the inside of the cone. And then whoever goes up there to ring it's gonna get this stuff all over them.
No.
So they pull out the ladder. They pull out the mace. One of the guys, sheriff's department, goes up there, starts spraying the inside of the cone with mace. Well, you know what happens when you spray a cone and you're looking down up at it? It just all backwashed on his face. So that was a mess.
Did it work at all? Like, did anyone try and like get like residual mace?
It didn't work.
The
poor guy that was trying to spray the inside of the cone, you know, just ended up macing himself, and had to take him to the hose and just hose the poor guy down. Right.
That is so unfortunate.
That was another year. And then meantime, you know, this bell's just being rung all night. So the next night the next year we just finally like put some wood around the ringers. And then the bell didn't ring. It just went conk, 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 kind of like all night long. Finally, we just had to remove the bell, right?
No.
So, you know, the cops are helping us with all of this and you know, just, you know, trying to figure out how to keep the bell from getting rung at like 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning to wake, you know, that just wakes people up. So, you know, we continue working with the cops. And one of the ongoing challenges has just been like really rowdy behavior.
Uh-huh.
Late at night, like those hours of, you know, 3-4 o'clock in the morning. And you know, I typically try and get some rest those hours when I can. And you know, what happens, and hopefully, you know, again, no one gets hurt. But there were folks lighting fireworks off the hood of the cop car at that point. Cops got really agitated. chased them down, and I learned something that evening, and that is, if you're wearing a big down puffy jacket, taser won't hit you. The taser doesn't get through the big puffy jacket. So
were you the one tased?
Oh, no, I was asleep. The perpetrator, you know, never rematerialized. The cops never got their guy. That morning, the sheriff comes up to me and he goes, "You know, I really love this event. You guys have a tendency to come up with the most creative training scenarios for my staff."
My gosh. Well, I was just about to say, it's like the boaters look forward to it every year. And I just can imagine the sheriff's office is like, it's another year. What's going to happen this year?
We have some strong partnerships. I mean, you know, I talked to you about the, you know, FERC relicensing and balancing downstream and upstream recreational use. And, you know, one of the things that went on early on in the early 80s as this was happening is the New and the Gali River became national recreation areas due to legislation that passed in the mid to late 80s. And, you know, with that legislation, Gali season actually got pushed forward a month. Gali season used to take place in October. So, you would come off the river in the early 80s. And it was in October, and you could still have really cold weather. So, you know, you'd come off with ice on your paddles. And by pushing the season forward with legislation for this national recreation area, lake owners felt a little slighted because they lost a month of lake operations.
Oh.
So there was this tension between kind of the boating community, the rafting community that had come in, and the local community who now were having to share their water with downstream users, or that's how they perceived it, right? Okay. So that tension existed, and it existed, you know, up until the time I became the executive director of American Whitewater. And one of the things I did at Gali Fest early on was to hire an economic impact study of Gali Fest, just Gali Fest weekend, not the Gali season, just Gali Fest weekend. What does this contribute to the local economy? I mean, you know, we were in a position where we'd have to call up the local Walmart, you know, a couple weeks before Gali Fest to say, "Hey, Gali Fest is 2 weeks out. Make sure you stock up on beer in cans, because we don't allow beer in bottles at the event because bottles break, right?
Yeah.
There are not a lot of hard, fast rules at Gali Fest, but that's one of them. No glass bottles.
Wait, what are the other ones?
The other ones are no open fires on the grass because it's athletic fields. So if you want to have a fire, it has to be in a fire pan. You can't just build a fire on the grass, right?
But people can have fires?
People can have fires, yeah.
Okay, nice.
Yeah, I'll tell you a story about that.
Oh, okay.
Another one. So anyway, you know, this economic development survey was done. And, it showed that we were bringing in over the weekend, we were bringing in a couple million dollars to the local economy.
What?
Right?
A couple million?
And it showed the range that people were traveling to get to Gali Fest, right?
Wow.
Which was like all up and down the eastern seaboard. And then a healthy contingent from Colorado. So
Colorado.
So it highlighted how many people were coming in, where they were coming in. It also highlighted their demographics. And you think, oh, Gali Fest is probably just a bunch of 20-year-olds running around, you know. And it's not. I mean, there's certainly that element. And that's great because, those are all future river stewards. But there's a large majority of people coming in for Gali Fest are kind of in that, 30 to 45 age group. So, and they have resources. They have money to spend.
Yeah.
So I shared this survey with the Chamber of Commerce and elected officials within Summersville. And the next year, the mayor came out to Gali Fest.
Really?
He joined American Whitewater. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
They wanted to see what was going on. Cops wanted to see what was going on. So the relationship between the town and the paddling community that's showing up for Gali Fest and rafting community that's on the river with outfitters.
Yeah.
I think it's really improved. Over the last 20 years. And
that's amazing.
It has huge implications for that part of West Virginia, which, you know, unfortunately, it's economically depressed, right?
Yeah.
You know, coal is, you know, it's an energy source, but it's not the energy source it once was. And, you know, things there are changing, and what replaces it is, you know, there've got to be creative solutions for the economy. And, you know, adventure-based nature tourism is one of them. And as a result, you know, you see legislation that passed recently that, you know, changed the status of the New River to a national park. The Gali is still in the National Recreation Area. And, you know, I do have to say that the staff of the New and the Gali, they are incredible. They're another link to the community that just does an outstanding job. The River Rangers are some of the best you will ever see in the whitewater environment. You know, they're highly trained. They're all super experienced, both rafters and kayakers. And they know, you know, they know where to be, when to be. And they do just a ton of preventive work. So
it's amazing. So
it's really, really cool to you know, see these relationships continue to build and grow. So getting back to fires.
Let's go back to fire. Let's hear it.
Well, fires are always a bonding thing. For many years, if you went to YouTube and you typed in Gali Fest, the thing that you would see is a group of people standing around a big bonfire. And there is one designated fire pit there, and that's okay. Where this happened. And you will see them chanting, $20, $20, $20, right? And this chant is going on around the fire. All of a sudden, you'll see this shirtless guy sprint through the crowd, do a forward flip, trying to get over the fire.
Oh no.
But lands in it, right? So that was certainly an unplanned ER trip.
Oh, but my gosh.
Fire, you know, fire and crowds. I mean, it's, you know, it's one of the things.
I mean, now we're getting into Burning Man territory to join with the Grateful Dead show.
Yeah. Well, like I said, Olympic Village and Grateful Dead show. It's a mix. I guess you asked me for a third one, and the third one.
Yeah.
I'm got a little buffering going on. The third one, you know, would have to be Grateful Dead show, Olympic Village, and then conservation environmentalist. You know, the whole stewardship aspect of what, you know, what American Whitewater is about. And this is the part that's, you know, that's really important. I mean, you know, the crazy stuff that happens, the stories, I mean, it's all fun and games, but you know, what happens on the river and being able to protect the river. I mean, that's where the real juice is. And as a result, that's where you see this huge congregation of folks on the river on Gali Fest Saturday, just having a great time and however they want to do it, you know? So
Of the people that you see on the river, have you seen anyone beat your 4-stack of rafts with stacking rafts?
Oh, I've seen so many things on the river. I've definitely seen people beat 4 stacks on the raft. You know,
what's the highest?
I think I've seen as many as 6, but they're kind of cheating because what they're doing is stacking big boats at the bottom, small boats at the top.
We
had one size boat. They were all big. And as a result, you know, it was 4, and it was more than we could hold on to.
Okay. So what I'm hearing is this year, 2025, if you go to Gali Fest and you're listening to this, try to beat try to beat the record. Okay. With all of the different, I don't even know what should we call them? Olympic events, like the boat hook, the splat, the dry flip, the whatever. What ones have you done personally?
You know, like I said, I have a long history on the Gali. And, you know, my paddling goes back to, you know, squirt boating in the early 80s. So, you know, many of these things were, you know, were squirt moves that came out of that. You know, so it's, you know, It's not something. It's not. Look, I have no interest in getting hucked off a pillow in a kayak right now. So I enjoy going and paddling. And
okay, good.
I'll continue to do that. And I think there's a whole new generation out there that would love to get hucked off a pillow in a kayak. And you know what?
Uh-huh.
Good on you, because you should take advantage of every ounce of juice you can pull out of that, because it will be a riot.
Oh my gosh, I love it.
And you will look back at it and you will be like, yeah, that was my time.
Well, and I'm so
great.
Excited for Golly Fest this year. I'm going to make the trek from Washington out. So that's exciting.
Good. You and Harris can hook up. You guys have a great time.
I know. I think we're going to, my roommate Harris, shout out Harris. Love you. Sells a bunch of her work of Harris. Shout out work of Harris. If you want cool party shirts, stickers, and very clever river art. But when is it the same weekend every year?
Yeah. Yeah. So look, just to keep things simple, third weekend in September every year.
Okay. Third weekend in September.
And it's the same show, might be somewhat different wrapper, but it's all going to be there.
Okay,
look,
I'll
leave you with one last story. Okay.
Okay. Let's hear it.
This one's really kind of important given where we are. So obviously I'm not here to make a political statement, but you know, we are in this really polarized political environment. And one of the things that the Golly really does is it does bring people together. And, you know, as an example of that, early on as the ED for American Whitewater, you know, I was pulling into the dam parking lot, which is where a lot of boaters congregate to get together and meet up with their friends, you know, it's where rafters are putting in. And, you know, I parked next to the VW bus with the Grateful Dead sticker, and I pulled in next to the car with, you know, the Trump sticker, and I went boating. And I met up with a couple of friends on the water, and one of them was, an outfitter manager from the Ocoee River in Tennessee, who was all fired up about this killer marketing plan that he had for his outfitting operation, where he was going to take his outfitter buses and park them at mega churches throughout the Southeast and leave them there on Sundays, you know, through worship. And it was going to be how, you know, he conquered the church youth market for his outfitting operation on the Ocoee. And the other friend that I met up with was someone who is well known as being paddle sports bad boy. Someone who's been involved in multiple kayak brands. Known for his rebel rousing, but someone I've also known for a very long time and would consider a friend. And he's telling me about, you know, moving back to Montreal and the paddling that's there and his smoking hot 23-year-old girlfriend, right? So I'm paddling into Insignificant, which is one of the first class four, you know, significant rapids there in the Golly. And I got the outfitter on one side telling me about his Christian rafting company business. And I got the paddling bad boy on the other side of me talking about his smoking hot 23-year-old girlfriend who ultimately, he, in all fairness to him, he did marry.
Oh, and, exciting. Good for them.
Yeah, it's good. It's worked out. And here I am going between these two guys going, I am paddling into Insignificant. This is awesome. These are two people that I consider friends of mine who couldn't be more different, more probably politically opposite.
Uh-huh.
But we're on the river together and we're having a great time. And that's what the Golly does. I mean, and that's what public lands and waters have historically done in the United States. So get out, enjoy public lands and waters, take advantage of them. You know, you need to go huck your meat off Pillow Rock. Go do it, man. Just do it. And remember how important these places are to us. Part of, you know, our shared natural and cultural heritage. And support them, right? They're under pressure right now. Support these public places because they're important to many of us, and they create lasting memories. So that's my spiel.
I really love your spiel, and I also want to go back to one of the things that you said of, you know, people in their 20s who are the future river stewards. And I just think that's such a good reminder that, you know, if you do go out and you do enjoy what you're doing, with who you're doing it with. It doesn't matter your age or anything like that. It's never too late or too early to get involved with supporting rivers, public lands, etc. And, you know, American Whitewater is a really great way to get involved, and going to festivals and hanging out with your friends is another really great way. So thanks so much for sharing all about Golly Fest. It's been so, I'm so excited for this year, and I really hope to see you out there.
Great, Kate. It's been nice talking with you. And yeah, come on out to Golly. I mean, it's an experience that it's pretty hard to beat.
I can't wait. And enjoy your ski vacation in Jackson.
Oh, thank you. I certainly
will. Or I guess in Idaho.
It's, other side of Jackson, but yeah, close. No.
All right. Well, you have a really good day, Mark.
Okay. Thank you, Kate.
See ya.